All right, folks, we're in lesson four, chapter four in Proverbs. In many ways, this is going to be one of my favorite lessons in the book of Proverbs because it is a father's lesson to his son. Chapter 1, 2, and 3, Solomon is giving lessons to his son Rehoboam, but here in chapter 4, it is David who is giving lessons to Solomon when Solomon was younger. Pick up in verse 1, it says, "Hear, O sons, the instruction of a father, and give attention that you may gain understanding." So pick this up. David is speaking to all of his sons, but he's also speaking to his son Solomon. He says, "For I give you sound teaching. Do not abandon my instruction." Here comes the teaching of David. Verse 3 says, "When I was a son to my father, tender and the only son in the sight of my mother." Okay, a little background. You're going to be kind of sit back and say, okay, now how did he get all of what he's fixing to say out of that one sentence? We know from history, David became king when he was 40 years of age. We also know that he was at least 50 years of age before Solomon was born. How do we know that? David's son, Absalom, David becomes king, and David's son, Absalom, lives under daddy for a while and then begins to rebel and wants to be the king. So David's son, Absalom, is old enough to think he's big enough to be king. So he begins to stage a coup against Daddy David. And David actually has to run from Jerusalem and go off on the other side of the Jordan River and be away from Absalom, as Absalom has formed an army against his father. On one of the trips where Absalom is riding through the forest to go and to get to attack his dad, he catches his hair in the oak trees and he hangs, and he doesn't die from hanging in the oak tree. He dies when his hair is entangled in the oak tree, and Joab and some of his men go and take spears and stab Absalom through the heart. Absalom dies. It crushes David. But when we look back in the story, David does not immediately just pick up his bags from the other side of the Jordan River and head back to Jerusalem. It takes almost a year for that to happen. Then, after he comes back, after that year is over, somewhere down in time, he doesn't go out because he's getting older. He doesn't go out to war with his men, and he goes up on the top of his balcony to look around, and lo and behold, he looks down onto the roof and he sees Bathsheba taking a bath. Bathsheba and her bath. Isn't God interesting on the names that he gives us? And so you know what happens. David calls for her. She's a married woman. There's an adulterous relationship that transpires. A baby is conceived. And now, over a 9-month period, David has to conspire. Remember, you just don't find out you're pregnant the next day. So this took some time before she finally sends word to David that she's pregnant. And then David has to start covering it up. And finally, he makes an attempt by sending out word to his general to try to have Uriah, the husband of Bathsheba, killed. And so finally it takes two attempts and Uriah is dead. After David has tried to convince Uriah to go back and spend the night with his wife to cover up the pregnancy, two nights in a row. And Uriah, who is a faithful servant, will not leave the doorstep of his king, David. So all that takes time. And then the baby's born. And then the baby lives for a short period of time and the baby dies. Now Bathsheba goes through a time of mourning. She goes through a point in time of mourning for her husband too before David takes her as a wife. She becomes a widow and then she goes through that proper time of mourning and then David calls for her to be his wife. And now we have the conception of Solomon. We're another year down basically in time before Solomon is born. Here, in this verse, Solomon is the only son in the sight of my mother. Solomon is going to have three more brothers. He's got a brother that was older than he that died just after birth. Then he's going to have three more brothers after this message is given to Solomon, which means Solomon must be 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 years of age. Okay. We know when David comes back into Jerusalem at age 50. So David has to be, when he's delivering this, about 65 years of age, somewhere in that neighborhood, give or take 3 or 4 years either direction. And now Solomon is old enough for David to give him this instruction. And the instruction's pretty PG. It's clean. So Solomon's young enough to start learning these things and hearing these things taught. What does that mean? It also means that David is going to have his last three sons with Bathsheba in his last 15 years of life, because he's going to die at the age of 80. So between the age of 65 and 80, he has three more sons. Here's the big thing about that. What does that mean if David is 65 to 80 and Bathsheba is still having children? She is a young, young lady. She was young when David committed the sin with her. You think, oh my soul, did you get all that out of that? Well, no, that plus the rest of the history in the book of 2 Samuel that we know from this story. So Bathsheba is significantly younger than David. Never mind about that. What matters is David took care of her. Wonderful. She becomes the mother of Solomon. Solomon's going to be the king. But Solomon, when he was young, heard his father give instruction to him. And I truly believe that it was because of the father's instruction to Solomon, it caused Solomon to want to be a wise person and to have wise understanding in everything that he did. So David picks up verse 4 and says, Solomon picks up and says, then he taught me and said to me, talking about dad, talking about David, let your heart hold fast to my words, keep my commandments and live. Acquire wisdom, acquire understanding. Do not forget nor turn away from the words of my mouth. Do not forsake her, and she will guard you. Love her, and she will watch over you. Remember last week I told you it was interesting how Solomon had tied together in like a chain the words wisdom and understanding. They're tied together. They're inseparable. They come together. However, what's interesting is you can't get understanding and then wisdom. It's always wisdom, and that leads to understanding. Now, let me give you a perfect example of this. You're driving along in your car, and something happens to your car, and you pull off to the side of the road. You, with a dead car, pop the hood, walk around there, and open the hood. And you look inside as if you're going to find something that you think you can fix. But you can't name one of the parts inside that engine. You ever done that? Yeah, I have. I remember my very first time of opening a hood thinking, oh my. And it was a little four-cylinder engine. It didn't have an air compressor on it for a refrigerating system or anything like that. I mean, it was just blank. I'm going, oh my, I can't name any of this. I don't know what's going on. Okay, in that, you have to gain a little wisdom when you open the hood. And it always is interesting to me of how many times women go open the hood like that's going to help to find something to start. Is that what it's for, to alert the guys? Yeah, okay. Well, the guys do it too. And by the way, every mechanic out there, I don't care how good you are as a mechanic, you have sometime in your life, you had to open the hood for the very first time and went, okay, because we all have to start the same place. You look in there and you have to go, okay, somebody has to teach you what the parts are. You have to learn that's an air compressor, and that's a hose, and that's the intake, and that's the battery, and that's the radiator, and there's where the thermostat is supposed to be, and there's the computer module that's smarter than all the rest of us, and all that type of stuff, and there's the thing for the windshield wipers, and you start gathering the names of these parts. And there's the exhaust system, and there's the block, and there's the timing chain, and there's the fan. Okay, you start, but you still can't fix anything. Because you don't go to the battery to fix something if your air's not blowing cold. you still don't know how to fix it. So you have to learn what parts are all tied together to make something work, like your air conditioning system. Well, once you do that, you can go, oh, wait a minute. Okay, so the air conditioning's not working, so it has to be something that's in that chain of items that needs to be fixed. Okay, now you're gaining some understanding. But you had to acquire the wisdom of the list of things that was down there before you can start gathering an understanding. And even at that, you're probably going to have to start switching parts. And you're going to make a guess. Well, because of the symptoms over time, the more cars you deal with that have the same symptoms, you can start making some pretty good educated guess of what's going on. That is how it works. You can't start guessing about something with an understanding, thinking like you're having an understanding when you don't even know what the parts are. Well, so it is with the things of God, the things that are in the Bible. Somewhere when you have opened the sheath to your sword, you have had to look in the new way. Okay. When you become a new believer, you open that piece of cow leather that has inside of it the pages of God's holy writ, and you go, okay, maybe we better shut the hood on this because I don't even know the parts and how it fits together. Folks, that's the way it is. When you open your Bible for the very first time, if you don't know what the parts are, you don't have any way of understanding what's going on. And it is the same thing as opening a hood on a car. That's the reason why it's so important that you tell your kids Bible stories so that along the way when they open, oh, here's Daniel in the lion's den. Oh, here's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and all of that in the fiery furnace. Oh, I've heard that story of Jonah. Oh, I've heard that story about Abraham and Sarah going off into Egypt. And you start like, oh, here it is. Oh, here it is. Oh, here it is. Oh, here it is. And then as you're reading through and you're fearing the Lord and you're worshiping the Lord, you begin to gather this more wisdom and more wisdom and more, and accompanying that and chained to it comes this understanding of what it's like to be in the will of God. Now, when a person speaks, as David does here, of a heart issue, when he says, let your heart hold fast to my words, he's talking about being passionate about it, and you should be passionate about the wisdom of the Lord so that it brings understanding to you of how to live your life. David says to Solomon, do not forsake her, and she will guard you. Love her, and she will watch over you. She, wisdom and understanding, intersected together, and David is the one who personified those two words and those two tasks together to call her a she, gave her that feminine pronoun, calls her a she, wisdom, with the understanding that comes along, will protect you, will guard you, will guide you, will be your companion for all those who put their faith in her. Verse 7 says, the beginning of wisdom is acquire wisdom. In other words, how do you start with wisdom? Get at acquiring wisdom. And with all you're acquiring, get understanding. You don't get understanding and then wisdom. You get wisdom, you acquire wisdom first, and understanding tags along, comes behind it. But the two are really and truly inseparable. You can't have understanding without having wisdom. As you go along in the business of this life with your daily thoughts and the duties, and as we see this thing, we're all overrun with fleeting thoughts of over there and something temporal in our beliefs that happens over here and all these actions. However, you need to understand wisdom is eternal. All the other things in this life are fleeting and they're temporal, but wisdom is eternal, and we must remain fervent that we want to learn what the Lord approves, and we want to run from those things that the Lord does not approve. That's kind of interesting. And down halfway through your commentary there's some things I've said about wisdom and understanding. Wisdom prescribes the destination. Understanding predicts the path. Wisdom provides the things that are required. Understanding provides the means to accomplish and obtain those things. Wisdom focuses on the eternal goal. Understanding focuses on the heartfelt reason for the eternal goal. Wisdom directs or points understanding obeys. The person who is already wise will seek more wisdom and know her value, wisdom and understanding, her value in obtaining the understanding. We know that people who are wise always are in a mode of learning. The more we learn about the Lord, the more we learn about God's Word, the more we know how to handle every single day the things that occur in this life. Every single thing that you are addressed with in daily life is covered somewhere in the Bible if you know where to find it, if you have read it, if you have been there. The stories are there to tell you what God approves of and what God does not approve of. Verse 8, he goes on to say, David talking, "Prize her and she will exalt you. She will honor you if you embrace her. She will place on you, on your head, a garland of grace. She will present you with a crown of beauty." Now, she doesn't do that on the outside. But I will tell you this, there's nothing in life that has such an effect on a person and brings him honor and respect than wisdom and understanding. Nothing in this life. When a person, whether they are wise or they are a fool, thinks that someone is wise and someone understands, all tied together, they give that person an incredible amount of respect. They put that person on a pedestal. No other thing in this life puts a person on the pedestal like wisdom and respect for wisdom and understanding. It's just something that happens. But what we have to understand is true wisdom and true understanding means that you are a moral person, that you're full of wisdom, you're full of understanding, and because of that, the people who are around you will actually, in a way, put a crown on your head and adorn you with some beautiful garland around your neck. Not really, but in their mind, they will. In their mind, they will. Several years ago, I wrote a little pamphlet that I have not published yet, but it's kind of interesting. It was more than several years ago because I'm in my 41st year of ministry now, and it was when I had entered my 30th year of ministry that I wrote the pamphlet. I need to go back, and I probably need to go ahead and publish it. It was 30 things I wish I knew about the ministry 30 years ago. And there were 30 things, such as the titles were "Put the Oxygen Mask on Yourself First." And that is so true as a minister. You know, you can lose your family because you've taken care of everybody else. But when your family needs help, you have to drop everybody else and go take care of family. Put the oxygen mask. That was actually written while I was on the airplane coming back from Oklahoma City after I was worn out going up and taking care of aunts. And I had to get back home to take care of my wife who had a car problem. And I could have gone ahead and stayed another day because what was going to happen was I was going to fly home to Houston from Oklahoma City, help my wife with the car program, a problem, and fly back to Oklahoma City to finish the task there. Or I could have said, "Honey, I can't come home." No amount of money is worth not flying home to take care of honey. Okay? Put the oxygen mask on yourself first, on your family. Well, the thing that the chapter that I'm talking about here was called "You Are on a Pedestal." And I talked about three different types of people that are in the church. There's the people who want to knock you off the pedestal, and I describe them. There's the people who want to keep you on the pedestal, and I describe them. And there's the people who don't care whether you're on there or not. Whether you go or whether you stay, doesn't matter to them, either way. And folks, we have them here at Sagemont. You know, it's in every church I've ever been in. We have these three people. And it's talking about that. That's what we're talking about here. Whenever there are people who are going to look to you and they are going to try to get to tempt you to break your wisdom and your understanding. There are people who don't even care you have wisdom and understanding. And there are other people who will die at your feet because of your wisdom and understanding. And then you will crush them whenever you fall. So you have to be careful. And you have to understand. Somebody's watching all the time. Verse 10. Hear, my son, David says to Solomon, and accept my sayings, and the years of your life will be many. I have directed you in the way of wisdom. I have led you in the upright paths. When you walk, your steps will not be impeded, and if you run, you will not stumble. Take hold of instruction. Do not let go. Guard her. Who's her? Wisdom and understanding, for she is your life. The truly wise person will always plan the path to avoid traps and to avoid stumbling over stones. When you're a Boy Scout and you're going out to go on a hike at a trail, you carry something with you to stable your step. So did David, Solomon's father. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me before still waters. Remember the rod and the staff he carries? Why does he have the rod and staff? So that if he comes up on some kind of trap or hole, he can check and see what it is before he gets there. He can prod along the sheep. He can stabilize himself. But guess what? If he hasn't got something on his feet to take care of all the rocks and the sticks and the stickers, he has to put something, leather shoes or sandals around his feet to keep his feet from stumbling over rocks. As a scout, we prepare with our boots to go either mountain climbing or whatever. I mean, think about this. I saw some people today who were going out mountain climbing, and the mountains they were climbing were not like this. They weren't even like this. They were like this, so that they had to climb up this mountain backwards, kind of hanging off the mountain. And they have these special shoes, and they have these special gear, and they have this special stuff that they screw in as they go, and they're holding themselves and they're tying themselves off. They're prepared so they can get to the top of this mountain. Yes, sir? What are you shaking your head? They need more wisdom. I was fixing to say, there ain't any wisdom. I don't know, but I see them do that, and I'm amazed, but they're preparing. Now, they would be fools to try to do that 120 feet or so off, 20 feet off the ground. I've fallen 21 feet and like to broke several things. You know, that's a long 4 feet, 5 feet for some of us. We don't even want to fall standing on our own feet, you know, at this point in time in life. And I know about that. And then the problem is you're, this is just how it is. Something's hurting. Something's broke. You're having a hard time. And lo and behold, when you're coming out of the bathroom, it seems like those little doors coming out of the bathroom are never big enough. And the poor little toes on either side of your feet. When you're hurting bad someplace else, what do? You break a toe. A little toe. Not even the second toe, but just the little toe. And it turns black as it can be. You're looking at somebody who knows about that from last week. Yep. Hurting bad with a kidney stone. Couldn't even hardly stand up here. Go home, think, oh, woe is me. Not watching, coming through the little door. Bam! Oh, my! I didn't even feel the kidney stone after that. Foot hurt so bad. Looked at it, it's black. Just black. Black and blue. It hurts. Put the shoe on. I don't even think I needed the medicine anymore because, you know, it's like a horse. You ever seen a horse where they have to stitch up its knee or something like that? They turn its nose. They put it in that thing and you turn it like this. You know, the horse can't even think about where he hurts. You stitch him up without any deadening because the horse is thinking about the nose. You know what I'm thinking about right now? My little toe right down there. I got on black shoes and it's as black as that little. Wisdom. Wisdom. I shouldn't have added all that. That took up time. The truly wise path person, though, plans his path so that he does not stumble. The path of the upright, avoiding all these trails of evil. The path that is smooth, avoiding all the sharp dangers along the way. Whether the wise person walks or he runs on the path that he's chosen, he doesn't have to worry because danger is not there or he is prepared for it. Verse 14 says, do not enter the path of the wicked and do not proceed in the way of evil men. Avoid it. Do not pass by it, Solomon. Turn away from it and pass on. Boy, Solomon was the one. When we go to the book of Ecclesiastes, we realize in 10 chapters, the first 10 chapters in the book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon was not a stellar follower of the Lord. He was a pretty good sinner because he did just about everything wrong that he could do. Turn away from it and pass on. Verse 16, for they cannot sleep unless they do evil. They are robbed of sleep unless they make someone stumble. They eat the bread of wickedness and drink the wine of violence. Do not mess with wicked people. Wicked people are all around us, and they are constantly trying to figure out how to do something else that is wicked. They can't even sleep. Another place in the scripture, it says they lie on their bed at night dreaming up ways to do evil. They are infatuated with evil. They are ADD about evil. ADD. They are OCD about evil. Obsessive compulsive. They want to do evil. It's the next thing that they can do to steal or to rob someone to get something that they have not earned. Oh, but they've earned it because they've stole it. That's part of their work. We don't want to be part of that. Now, we can interpret what David is saying to Solomon a little easier than what he said. What he's saying, let me interpret it for you. He says, do not live with sinful people. That's what he's saying. Living with sinful people and associating with people are two different things. We have to associate with people, but we don't have to live with them. We must associate with them in order to share the wisdom of the Lord with them, but we should not live with them and approve of their sinful ways. A truly wise person will not continue to live in a home where stolen money has purchased its contents. A truly wise person will not ride along with the drug dealers and the thieves. Do you know how many folks have been tagged and found guilty for just tagging along? Just tagging along. A wise person will not accompany a person in possession of illegal things. However, an even evil person, they will crave all those things. They can't wait till it's dark so they can go do something else that's evil. They go out every night looking for mischief. Verse 18. But the path of righteousness is like the light of dawn that shines brighter and brighter until the full day. The way of the wicked is like darkness. They do not know over what they stumbled. David wants Solomon to be filled with open, lighted, instructive paths. He wants him to be far away from those gloomy, dark, dangerous paths that are going to come his way. The righteous can see what is coming, and the wicked cannot see what is coming. They go out to do wickedness and they do not know where they're going to end up. Oh, they think they're going to be victorious in their evil ways. But along the way, somewhere along the way, they lose their focus and they lose in what they're trying to do. Just go ask Bonnie and Clyde. Just a perfect example. My son, give attention to my words. Incline your ear to my sayings. Do not let them depart from your sight. Keep them in the midst of your heart, for they are life to those who find them and health to all their whole body. Solomon is recounting what his father has said to him in this conclusion. His conclusion is going to have some warnings. And David wants Solomon to hide the warnings in his heart. Hide them there. Just like the heart pumps good, clean, wholesome blood to every cell. The spiritual heart pumps wisdom and understanding to the soul. David continues with these four warnings to his son Solomon. David says to Solomon, watch your heart with all diligence, for from it flows the springs of life. Everyone knows how easy it is for the affections of your heart to go astray. Every one of us have had our mind set on something, and then lo and behold, something little floozy comes by and we lose our direction. We lose our direction. Back in 1999, Kay and I decided we wanted a Bonnie and Clyde car. I brought that up a while ago so to have some context. We're looking for a 1934 Ford. That's what we wanted. We wanted a car. We've got one, by the way. But on our searching, as we searched all over, one night we were in Mahia coming through about midnight, coming back home to teach a Sunday school lesson to y'all, as if we should have been home a long time earlier, but we were young then and foolish. And we drive by this old car lot, and my wife goes, oh, look at that little car. Oh, Jim, you got to turn around. So we turn around, we go back to the car lot, and there's a 1954 Studebaker. And I said, Kay, that's not exactly what we've had our eyes on. And she looks at it a little more and says, yeah, you're right. But it sure did look good underneath the lights. It sure did good, looks good sitting there, and it was all shiny and everything. We got back on the road, and I thought it was the most interesting thing I have ever heard anyone say. My wife says lots of profound things, but this was very profound. We get to back to 45. We've just turned on to 45, coming through Mahia, got over to the 45 to come back. We were coming back the back roads. And she goes and she says, "You know, I think I just had an inkling on what it's like to be a guy." And I said, "What do you mean by that?" She says, "Well, you have your eyes set on, you know, the one you love and a marriage and all that. And then some little floozy comes by and causes you to go, ooh." Right. She's right, isn't she? Absolutely. Girls, you do it the same thing, except it's over a craft or something like that. You know, women are always out there trying to do the next blanket or the next picture or the next knitting or essential oils or something, you know. Do what? I don't know much. Remember, I think all women are pure and holy. The physical heart thrives for what is good and clean and pure. But the sinful heart cannot be protected by wisdom and understanding unless you cherish and love her. That heart should strive for pureness to come through. It should keep you. You should watch your heart. Make sure that it's good and pure what's going into it. He says the second warning here. He says, watch your mouth. Watch your mouth. Put away from you a deceitful mouth and put a devious lips far from you. Oh, you all know it. I've already told it to you. My dad's favorite saying that I have remembered all my life is, bricks and sticks can all be fixed, but words can surely hurt you. And he is so right. There's been so many people who their lives have been lost and changed forever because of the things they've said. But I want you to understand, if you have a clean engine on your car, let me back up. If you have a dirty engine on your car that's full of yuck and gunk and silt and carbon, all that kind of stuff, it's going to belch out of the exhaust, messy, dirty exhaust. If you have a clean engine, the only way you know that something's coming out of the exhaust is as you look through the exhaust, you can see the clear heat wave that causes what you're looking at to kind of go like this. That's the only way. It's clean. What comes out of your mouth and over your lips is what's coming out of your heart. And you can apologize all day long and say, "Oh, I didn't mean it. I didn't mean it. That's not really how I feel." Yes, it is how you feel because it came out of your mouth. Now, you may be convicted about it and you may change your mind about it, but once it has come out, it cannot be retrieved. And that sometimes there's no amount of apologies that are good enough for the other person to accept that you have a changed heart. Sometimes the wife says, "I am tired of hearing your words. I want to see some action." I'll leave it there. 25, watch your eyes, David says to his son. Let your eyes look directly ahead and let your gaze be fixed straight in front of you. Well, Solomon didn't get that message. Had he gotten that message, he probably would not have had 700 wives and 300 concubines. David warned Solomon, keep his eyes looking ahead, fixed straight, forward. Obviously, we have to look around us to keep safe. But we don't have to get distracted by things that keep us off the way that we should be headed. His last fourth warning here is watch your feet. Watch the path of your feet, and all your ways will be established. Do not turn to the right or to the left. Turn your foot from evil. In other words, David is saying that when you set your goals, your goal is only part of the process. As you're headed towards your goal, you must watch where your feet are going because that is vital. Here, David is warning Solomon not to visit the place where wickedness is. Do not contract bad habits. And you need to understand, young Solomon, that evil lurks all around you. And I want to tell you, it can even trip up the wisest person. It can trip you up. Trip you up. We're thankful for David because I believe that almost all of Proverbs stems from what he learned from his father. And we've all learned things from our father.